Hey, Mitch Cleary's reporting some pretty big news not too long ago, Kay. Now, Jordan DeGoey's case was due to be held yesterday, December 8, in New York, up on those assault charges, of course. Now, Mitch is reporting that that case has been adjourned for response and decision until January 18 next year. So we know he's been banned, ostracised, kept out of Collingwood and the facilities and the training there. So what does this mean for Jordan DeGoey's prep for next year? Collingwood's going to have to let him back in, surely, aren't they?
Well, I'm not sure how they... I mean, what's changed for them to change that stance that they've had?
So would he be forced now to train on his own right up until potentially...
I think so. Yeah, well, January 18. I can't see... Because the players are going to go away for Christmas break, which will be... a couple of weeks. They're probably not back until sort of
first week of Jan.
So yeah, it's only a week or so beyond that. They can't welcome him back until this has been heard. But then when you think about it, the preparations for the season, it comes along pretty quickly in March for round one. Doesn't give him a lot of time to get ready. So out of contract as well, which is fascinating for me. I can't see there's any way Jordan DeGoey is a Collingwood footballer in 2023.
I can't let the Jordan DeGoey conversation go just there. You are convinced in your mind that this will be his last contract for Collingwood. It expires at the end of next year.
Well, let's work our way through this. He can't return to training until after January 18th. We've just heard that case has been adjourned, so there's nothing, no information has changed that Collingwood could welcome him back from then. I'm reading between the lines, and you might know more, that the DeGoey camp isn't that happy with how Collingwood have handled it. So there's a little bit of animosity already with that, and a few gripes on the fact that they have stood him down from the DeGoey side. But then you put yourself in the Collingwood side of things. He's should be in the sweet spot of his career. There will be a club that gets sucked into offering him a long-term contract worth significant money now, not the money that he would have got two seasons ago. Collingwood can't afford to match that with the risk that he poses outside of football. So, you know, there may be Collingwood best case, what a two-year offer that's pretty modest with incentives, behavioural incentives and also performance incentives. DeGoey's probably his last significant contract in the AFL. He's going to have no option but to leave. It's just a matter of how many clubs are interested in him and how many are prepared to offer him big dollars. Of course, a lot will be determined by how the findings of this court case come about and also his performance this year. He'll play for Collingwood this year, you would think, but beyond next year, I can't see there's why he stays, and he probably needs a fresh start.
Well, 62 games, 10 years, 4 clubs. Jacob Townsend's career had more twists and turns than most, it's fair to say, but he pulled the pin on Tuesday after a journey that did see him become a premiership player, and he's kindly given us some time this morning. Morning, Jacob. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Morning, boys. How are we?
We're going well here. How are you going now, a couple of days into this new phase of your career? I mean, you had to fight for everything in your career. There was a chance of staying on at Gold Coast, but you chose to pull the pin. Was it just fatigue that got you in the end? What was the reasoning behind the decision?
Yeah, it's a bit of everything, really. Just yeah, as you said, the last sort of 4 years I've been fighting for that spot on the list, and I thought it was a bit of time for me to move on and try and have a bit more certainty in my life and stuff for that. And yeah, so that's sort of what it came down to.
And you haven't wasted any time. I saw you signed for Southport Sharks, which are a big club up that way. And are you moving into carpentry? Is that what life after footy looks like?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, so I'm going to do my carpentry work. I was doing that when I was at Richmond for a bit, but the last sort of 2 years because of COVID and that, haven't had much of a chance to sort of do it. So I'm looking forward to that. That's another reason why as well, because yeah, I've sort of got that sort of phase already sort of planned out as well. So yeah, and then as you said, yeah, I'm going to play VFL footy for Southport Sharks as well. So really looking forward to that.
Oh, it's exciting. I'm interested in your mental state. I mean, it's such a long journey, multiple clubs. Every Thursday, you're probably waiting for the selection call from the coach. When and where are you playing? And then at the end of every season, you're waiting for that contract. I mean, did it take a toll mentally on you initially? And is it something you just learned to deal with?
Yeah, every Thursday was probably the call from the coach saying that I'm playing twos for the majority of the majority of the 10 years, but that's fine. But yeah, as I said, I think for the last, yeah, for every year up until maybe this one, I was actually okay with it and sort of fine, because knowing that, like, it is what it is and I couldn't do much about it. But I think maybe as I got a little bit older and stuff, and after sort of 10 years, I sort of wanted a bit more certainty. But those sort of early years, everyone always asked me how I sort of cope with it and dealt with it. But I was like, I couldn't do anything about it. So I just had to wait and see whatever unfolded. And I was fortunate enough to sort of hang on there for the last sort of 4 years.
It's a funny one, because we saw you play some terrific footy, and at your best, you looked capable at the level. Why didn't it probably play out in terms of the amount of football that you would have loved to have played in the AFL, do you think?
Yeah, probably comes down to obviously just that consistency in performance. Times where, yeah, I think is maybe as well, because I always thought I was sort of last one pick, first one out, so that sort of probably didn't help my cause as well, in terms of sort of going out there and trying to fight for feeling like I was fighting for my spot every week in the AFL. And it probably only didn't really feel like that when I came in and played those sort of five games at the end of 2017, and maybe because I played the first 10 in 2018 as well after that. Just because I sort of had the mindset in the reserve grade in 2017 that whatever happens, just go out there and just enjoy my footy and try and be the best player I can. And that sort of worked for me, because I sort of knew that I probably wasn't going to get picked in the AFL, and that was maybe my final year. But yeah, as I said, I managed to hang on for another, I think, four after that. So yeah, probably just that, just sort of my own mindset, and in the mindset of that, I was probably last one pick, first one out.
I wanted to ask you about that run that you had around 22, 23, and then the three finals that you played. You kicked 16 goals in five games, including 11 in the space of 2 weeks in round 22 and 23 in the lead-up to that premiership. I mean, was that just a footballer in his absolute sweet spot?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely. As I said before, like, I wasn't expecting to come into that team at all for that whole year. So when I did, that's the most calm and most sort of relaxed I've ever felt. And probably shouldn't have been, because obviously we knew that we're going to go into a final series. So yeah, that was just the most, I didn't even think about anything when I went out there and played, and yeah, fortunate enough to sort of play right and be able to hold my spot. And that also helped obviously having playing forward when you got a pretty good midfield and sort of back six that sort of kept the ball coming in. And I think the way that we were playing in those times with that like fast movement, just keep surging the ball forward. That sort of played in my favour too, I think.
Hey, Jacob, I love the anecdote you gave to the AFL website this week. So you come in for round 22, 2017, your first game of that year, and Damien Hardwick says to you, "Righto, Towner, all you need to do is go out there and kick six and you'll stay in."
Yeah, that's not a word of a lie. That's exactly how it panned out. So in the pre-game speech, you just sort of, obviously that was my first game of the year, and he goes, "Well, Tanner, you know, you'd go out there and have six and you'd be sweet." And then, yeah, fortunate enough, I did kick six, and I think he might have said something the next week too when I played against St Kilda and kicked five, but he didn't say five, but he said something along those lines as well. So yeah, so that was good.
Well, he was true to his word, wasn't he? So as Kane said, you go all the way through the grand final and you're forever a premiership player, as George has just mentioned off our text machine here, Jacob. Absolutely love this bloke. I'm not a Tigers supporter, but I followed his journey very closely through that 2017 season. Brilliant player, and those Tiger mongrels will love him forever. I wanted to ask you about the grand final. How many times do Richmond supporters in particular stop and ask you about that tackle on Matt Crouch that's lived on through the years?
Yeah, that's probably, I think I said it in that article as well, that's probably the most recognised thing I've sort of done in my AFL career, and especially for Richmond fans. So yeah, they always sort of say that's the best thing that they've sort of seen. The best thing from that grand final, sorry. And just in the last 24 hours, 48 hours, just the amount of support and text messages and everything on the social media from Richmond fans or anywhere has just been overwhelming. I didn't really think it was going to be like that. But
that's nice.
Yeah.
So four clubs, as Sammy mentioned. Will you identify yourself, though, as a Richmond person? Like, is that too simple to do that? And but what affiliation will you have to the other clubs? I mean, is it a balancing act for you or not? Or are you just a Richmond man now?
No, yeah, I'll get off this a bit. I reckon I'm obviously going to be obviously played at four, and every team sort of had a bit of a different experience. But, yeah, obviously with Tigers, I've got the premiership there, so that's obviously going to tie me there for a while, and just that sort of bond and stuff that we had there that's been well documented, but also at the Giants, and got a bond with your mate Chad too, your brother, because we obviously played the first game there as well. So again, with the Giants, it's sort of different because we're all under 18s and sort of taken away from home and sort of put in a place where we didn't know anyone outside of footy or inside footy really either. So that's another sort of bond there that we'll have, and I'm still good mates with, and I still chat with so many of those boys as well. And then at our Macedon there in the COVID year, so you know, I said in the article as well, that's the most AFL games I've ever played in a year, but everyone thinks I didn't play at Essendon. So that's a sort of a bit of a weird one there. And obviously here at the Suns, I only played a handful of games, but I've also enjoyed my time up here as well.
So take me through the Suns, because we're all worried about them, let's be completely honest, but what's it like on the ground?
It's
obviously they sort of remind me of the Giants, sort of when I first come. They're all young and everyone's sort of come from in the state and whatnot, and obviously I've only been there for this year, so I can't speak on anything that's happened prior, but I think just sort of the turnover and of the players and staff and whatnot, but I think in the last sort of couple of years they've sort of held a bit more of a group together, and I reckon that's going to hold them in good stead. They've sort of got that good bunch of core players, and they're really going to buy into sort of what the coaches are saying, and now I think they've got in three or four assistants from other clubs who have seen experience and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say you have to be worried about them. I reckon they'll. Yeah, it was for once they just play those more games together, and I think you've seen them when they do play as one, and well, they can play a pretty exciting brand. So hopefully they can do that more this year.
Jacob, it's been so good to talk to you this morning. Obviously, you would have liked to have played more games, no doubt about that, but you'll always have the premiership. You'll always have 2017, some glorious moments, and the love for you off the text machine here is absolutely huge. Telling. So many Richmond supporters are texting in with fond memories of you and passing on their best wishes. So good luck on the tools, and we'll follow your progress in the VFL as well up there at the Sharks. Thanks for your time, mate.
No worries, boys. Cheers. Thank you.
Jacob Townsend there, four club player, 62 games, a decade in the system. One of the more colourful journeys there's been. Struggling with back pain, now's the time for keys. Are open now in Werribee and Northcote.
Blitzarves jacks the three, that's good. There's Matty Rocci through to Sarah Blitzarves, the lane opened up for her. Amy Rocci, a 1-2 with Bishop, now along the baseline, Sarah Blitzarves. Cole draws the double team. Swings it up top to Bishop. Blitz arms free down low and the easy make.
Oh, yeah, we've got used to that sound, haven't we? Sarah Blitzer, she does it for the Opals, she does it for the Southside Flyers, and she does it very well regardless of where she's playing. And she joins us for Ego Power Tools. Think outside with 56-volt Ego Power Plus outdoor power equipment. Sarah, welcome to SEN.
Thank you for having me.
Now, there's a lot of good basketball movies out there. Pardon me for a second, but we're talking about great sporting movies. Have you got one for us that you go to?
I'll tell you, like, one of my favourites would be the Dennis Rodman doco, For Better or Worse. That was incredible.
You know what? I don't think I've seen that car. I've read both his. I think he's got two autobiographies that I've read. But if the doco's any good as those, Sarah, it'd be colourful viewing.
It is a very emotional show, but it's definitely worth the watch. I just feel like I want to jump into the screen and give him a hug afterwards. That's how good it is.
Hey, now your Southside Flyers, of course, are champions, and you opened your campaign in tremendous style over the Bendigo Spirit. Did it easily, and so did you. Well, it looked like it anyway. 27 points to go with 11 rebounds. You've just picked right up where you left off.
Yeah, look, I tried really hard that game. It was good. It was quite nerve-wracking to begin with. I think playing in front of friends and family again in the crowd, it was very unusual because obviously our last 2 years have been very disrupted with that due to COVID. So it was super nice to, I guess, get that out of the way and, you know, play and, yeah, super happy with the result.
How did you reflect on the Olympic experience for yourself? You initially missed out and then a last-minute call-up when Liz withdrew. How was that all for you? Was it an emotional roller coaster?
That could not be described any better. It was, it was hard because I got cut from the WNBA as well as the Olympic team pretty much within a week of each other. So I was not doing too well. It was, I guess, two of your dreams getting taken away from you and... it was very hard. And then, yeah, all of a sudden, you know, getting the call up for the Olympics and trying to change your mentality from borderline hating the opals to I'm really excited to go to the Olympics. So it was tough. Like, I won't lie, I'm super honest about it with everyone. It was very hard. But going to the Olympics was such an unreal experience. And it was almost like a massive reward for everything that had happened that year as well. So I couldn't be more grateful. And like I said, it was just such a cool experience.
So the WNBA trial and going through that as well, I mean, everyone's dream would be any basketball to make in the NBA, the WNBA. But what was it like? Was it brutal for you? Can you reflect on that with us?
It was a good experience. It really was. It definitely made me change the way I play. I became more of an aggressive player because obviously the girls over there are double in size as they are here in the WNBL. So it was a good learning experience for me. You know, it was quite eye-opening just to see, I guess, the change of style over there. And I think I'm very grateful for it, even though, you know, I didn't make it. I still feel like I improved a lot as a player. And, you know, getting cut from both teams made me an angrier player. And I think that's something that I actually needed.
What's involved in a tryout when you're trying to make it? I mean, can you take us through a typical week schedule?
Yeah, well, it's quite intense. So you basically train every day. I think we get a day off maybe once every 2 weeks or something. And basically you're doing gym, you're doing on-court individuals with you and the coach for, you know, maybe half an hour, an hour. And then it's just a full-on team training for 2 hours. I was with Phoenix, so they were an easier training camp compared to most because there's a lot of veterans on that team. But I know that a lot of other WNBA teams will go and have a lunch break and then come back out on court for another 2 to 3 hours and train again. So I'm kind of wrapped that I was with an easier team because I couldn't even imagine training 5 to 7 hours a day on court.
You mentioned family earlier, Sarah. You obviously come from very good stock. I mean, we know your brother plays for Geelong, but both your parents played at a high level in the sport. They played nationally, they played at Olympics, they played at World Championships. So who do you play more like, your mum or your dad?
Well, I look more like my mum out on court and the way I run and jump and stuff. So I get those comments quite a lot from people like, gosh, you play just like your mum. So I'll have to say her. Other than that, you know, I think I've got my dad's mentality a little bit as well out there. So it's quite nice, though. I quite enjoy having parents that both played.
Yeah, and it must be magnificent to have. And how are they in the practical sense in terms of advice or support and all that, given the fact they've been there and done that, albeit in a different era, of course?
Yeah, no, it's super good. They are. They're really good. I think advice, especially when I was younger, you know, you're super happy to have and stuff. But I think as you get older, they kind of realise that coaches take over, and I guess we hit a point where it's like, I don't want to listen to you guys anymore and just be mum and dad. So they've been really good. I think they've helped me a lot. I had a massive knee injury a few years ago, and they've both had knee injuries. So going through that, they helped a lot. And then also, yeah, getting cut, it was like just nice to go back and lean on them a little bit as well.
And on Monday, you were named, and congratulations to you, Sarah, the 24-player squad for next year's FIBA Women's World Cup, which will obviously be held in Sydney. That's September 22, 2022. So with that in mind, just going back to the Olympics, there's been a long-standing rivalry with the USA, and you've run them close historically, not quite the case in the quarterfinals at Tokyo. So is there a bit of a gap to make up there with Team USA?
Yeah, absolutely. They're just our biggest rivals, and you know what? They're just so arrogant too. So it just would be so nice to beat them. But I know, but we can't at all go into Worlds thinking that USA, USA, you know what I mean? There's a lot of great European countries out there. I mean, Japan are now a force to be reckoned with too. So, you know, we just got to focus. You know, the lame old speech of one game at a time that everyone hears, but it's literally true. You have to actually focus on one game at a time. And hopefully we get a chance to play USA, and there'd be nothing better than playing them in a gold medal match either.
So, Sarah, just on that, how does that arrogance manifest itself? Is it just a bit of lip out on the court, or how does it come across?
Oh, just, yeah, it would be a bit out on court, just the way they walk around and... You know, it's just, I don't know, they just, you can just sense it. You know, you just pick up vibes, you can just see it. So it's just one of those ones that's like, gosh, I would just love to beat them down.
Yeah, Sarah, I apologies for doing this because you can't do an interview often without your brother coming up. But we've got a lot of texts coming through this morning asking you where he plays his best footy, because a lot of Geelong fans get frustrated that he's thrown all over the park. So where does he play his best footy?
You literally are asking the wrong person. I seriously don't even know the football rules properly. But look, I think he's most comfortable in the back line, and I think he likes, you know, tagging up and having that kind of goal to have for a game as well. And, you know, he's really lucky because he's super versatile. So he's needed, you know, if the ruck's out, he's needed there. If someone's out in the forward line, he's needed there. In saying that, he'll probably hate me saying this, I probably wouldn't trust him too much in the forward line. So. not sure if I want him kicking goals, but, you know, throw him in the back line, he'll be fine.
a sibling can say that, Sarah. No dramas whatsoever. So domestically, just before we leave you, as I said, you've opened up very nicely. You've got the Melbourne Boomers on Saturday night, your crosstown rivals, and it looks as though it's early days, but, geez, you're forming a nice little 1-2 punch with the new recruit Abby Bishop down there.
Yes, I am so grateful and rapt to have Abby on our team. She is such a nice addition. You know, she's super long. Her arms, she can block anyone. She's super smart. She can shoot from outside, score inside. Just a great person to have on the team. So, yeah, really rapt with that. And, yeah, looking forward to playing the Boomers because they're going to be a very tough matchup. And, like you said, crosstown rivals. So we have to get the win there to just get bragging rights, I say.
Have to. Hey, thanks so much for joining us. Loved how candid you are, Sarah. Really appreciate it. Best of luck with, obviously, this Saturday and the season beyond and some big international dates that you've got locked in as well. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Sarah Blitzer's there. Sarah was here for Ego Power Tools. Think outside with 56-volt Ego Power Plus outdoor power equipment. The Blitzer's, what a sporting family.
Oh, how good. And just great people as well. How refreshing was that?
Yeah. Mark is very much the same. I haven't met or spoken to the parents, but I reckon the apple wouldn't have fallen too far from the tree. They are a great sporting family. Hey, we need to talk to this man because the NBL season burst into life last weekend, and the South East Melbourne Phoenix made an absolute mess of the New Zealand Breakers. A reminder, you can catch every NBL game live on ESPN with KO and Kane. Hey, our first two callers through right now on 1300 736 736 to Trentos out the back. They get a double pass to tomorrow night's Phoenix Breakers clash at John Cain Arena because they're going back at it, the Phoenix and the Breakers. The tip-off is at 7:30. So all you got to do is pick up the phone and call and you're going for free. This man will be there, Dane Pinot, big man from the Phoenix. Welcome to you, Dane.
Hey, mate, it's good to be here. And just for the record, I would be very happy with a 5-0 as well.
Good man.
I'm outnumbered here.
Gee whiz, after last year, which we'll get to for you, which was difficult, of course, you must be happy with the way life's going so far this season. Early days, but an absolute mauling of the Breakers at the weekend, 24 points.
Yeah, it was great. It was a perfect start for us. Obviously, like, they had a bit of a difficulty through the week with COVID restrictions and everything, so we do have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but yeah, it's a flying start for us and hopefully the start of a big season.
So your struggles last year are well known. I think you had a back injury that kept you out for a long period of time. And then what happened? You came back, you fought so hard to get back, and then you went and did yourself a mischief with your knee, a meniscus injury.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a problem with my back. I had a prolapse disc, so I was out for about 6 months of that. And then when I came back, I guess I just wasn't quite ready for the speed of it all. And it was like the 1 week of training, sort of at the end of the week, I just landed a bit funny and I tore my meniscus. I broke a bit of cartilage and I had to go get that operated on as well, which was obviously very frustrating. But, I mean, I guess that's just kind of sport. Sometimes you get a little bit unlucky with this kind of thing.
Mm.
So 16 minutes you played in the season opener. How's it going to look for you this year, and how will you manage the issues that you've had?
Well, this year it's a little bit different for me, I guess, from the last season. I really played with Phoenix when I was a starter this year. We're definitely coming off the bench behind Big Joe Chi. So my minutes will be a bit restricted. And I think this year, since it has taken me so long to sort of get back into it, is more just trying to get myself, you know, comfortable out there playing again. And there'll be limited minutes, I suppose, probably more down and around like the 10 to 12 minute range, I guess, depending on the foul situations in the game, stuff like that. But for me, mostly this year, I think that I'll be, my role mostly be coming off the bench and trying to give as much energy as I can and come in for short little stints while Joe takes a break.
New import Xavier Munford was the star of the show. He finished with 27. He's the X factor. Now, your coach Simon Mitchell says that he could be even more aggressive. Like, if that's the case, how good can Xavier be?
Yeah, no, he's great. He's so springy and athletic, and he just seems like when you get in, he gets in an isolation, he can just break down almost anyone. It's really nice to see him going out and doing it against other people, because I've had a bit of a nightmare trying to defend myself in practice. The number of times he's just blown by me, I've had enough of it. I'm excited that it's the season now, so I can soon do it against other people. But he's an exceptional talent, and he's going to be great this year.
Now, you mentioned training. You're not a small man, Dane, obviously. You're 6'9" in the old, 206 centimetres. But what on earth is it like going up against Joe Chi at training? Now, is he 7'11"? He's not that tall, surely.
No. I think he's 7'1", maybe.
7'1".
He is very big, though. His wingspan is ridiculous. It's like 7'7" or 7'8". And like his arms, they're ridiculously long. You know, there's plenty of times where you think he's well out of the play, and then all of a sudden your shot gets blocked, and it's like, it's a bit annoying, to be honest. But it's great. It is great to have him on our team as well. He's very good. He's going to have a big year. He was just coming back last week as well. He only came back with the team on the Saturday morning before the game, because he was away with the Chinese national team playing a couple FIBA qualifier games. We didn't see the best of Joe on Saturday, but I'm sure we'll see the best of him as the season goes on. And he'll do some freaky stuff. There's times where he just picks the ball up out of the air where you think it's miles away from him. He just stretches his long arms out and he picks it out. So he's pretty incredible.
Are you the number one team in town now? Have you overtaken United?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think so. We play on this Sunday, actually, in a throwdown. So hopefully we can prove that. But yeah, we really think that we're the number one team in town this year.
Now, Dane, how can you say that in all seriousness? You need to argue your fact here. Back it up.
Well, I just think that we've got a lot better team this year. And we only beat them just in the preseason. But I think you'll see as the year goes on that we'll take care of business against United. We were really close last year. It's only our second year in the league, and we took him to the game 3 in the semi-finals. We think in our third year of the league, we can go one step further and beat them if they're there. And we'll be certainly hoping to do that during the regular season as well.
Now, for those unaware, your journey, I don't know if you basketball is all you remember as a kid, Dane. Obviously, you're the son of Brad Pino, played in the NBL, of course, for Devonport Warriors, Melbourne Tigers, and you went to college in the US to get your education and play NCAA over there. But was it always basketball for you? Were you brainwashed from a young age?
I wouldn't say I was brainwashed. I did have a basketball in my hand from when I was a little baby and everything like that. But my parents did get me to try a lot of sports. I was a bit of a late developer, though, and to be honest with you, I was just really bad at everything else. I was not a very good footy player. I did swimming for a little bit, but I didn't like not being in the team. I did a couple other sports. I was okay at volleyball, but yeah, to be honest with you, basketball was really the only thing I was very good at. And being a competitive person, I didn't like not being very good at sports, so I stuck with basketball.
What's the protocols around COVID now? I mean, testing and if a player tests positive, close contacts and all those types of things. Can you share the latest with us? Because a lot of other sporting codes are wondering how they're going to manage it as well next year.
Yeah, to be honest, we do a lot of testing. We do the PCR test twice a week. If there's been any instances of, you know, close contact with players and stuff, I think we'd have to go another round of testing. We've been lucky so far in our team where we haven't had a player test positive. I think I gave us the biggest scare when my roommate tested positive, but fortunately for the team, I was negative and I was able to isolate away from him. So I guess in the instance of a player testing positive, then we'd all have to we probably all have to just get our tests, and the ones who are negative will be able to go back to training, and the ones who are not will have to go into isolation. That's what seemed to happen in New Zealand when they had a couple of positive cases. And our restrictions around the games and stuff is pretty tight, so we're in at the minute the 72-hour protocols, which is basically stage 4 lockdown for the NBL guys. We can't go to restaurants. We're not supposed to be going to people's houses just for the 72 hours before the game, so to hopefully limit the spread of it through the teams and everything like that. And outside of that, it's probably more like, you know, outside of the 72 hours, we have a little bit more freedom, but not too much. We have to be pretty careful.
Well, it's been a bright start for the Phoenix, Dane. Well done on that. You got the Breakers again on Friday, and then the big throwdown after that. We can't wait for it. I appreciate your time this morning, and best luck for the rest of the campaign.
No worries. Thanks, heaps, fellas.